Matt Sullivan here to remind you to stop putting screens on your gutters. Better to schedule a free estimate with the local experts at Gutter Helmet so you stay off the ladder. Visit gutterhelmetindy.com. With Gutter Helmet, you'll never clean your gutters again. gutterhelmetindy.com.
Good morning. It is Wednesday, March 27th. It's 5 minutes after 10. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So it happened what seemed to be in the middle of the night, early morning, and a dispatcher crackled over the radio saying that that cargo ship had lost its steering capabilities and was heading towards the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And in about 90 seconds, the police responders had managed to stop a good majority of the traffic from crossing that bridge. And right now it appears that six workers are feared dead from that accident.
Yeah. And anytime six people die, obviously it's horrific. And you just thoughts and prayers to those people's family. However, it sounds like some swift action from the ship itself may have saved a lot of lives because they were the quick action from authorities in Maryland. They were able to basically clear that bridge to where there was not a slew of traffic maneuvering across it. And Tony was talking about this yesterday. A lot of people think, well, it was the middle of the night. How much could there have been? You're talking about a port city.
Yeah, 30,000 people cross that bridge every day.
Right, and you're talking about people come and go at all times because of the port status. So this is not something like, oh, there might have been four people. There could have been 400 people. You don't know. So thankfully, and again, anytime anybody loses their life, it's horrible, but thankfully it was not worse. Now the question becomes, what exactly happened here? Because, you know, you can't just jump to clearly something is, you know, amiss and it's a conspiracy or, a terrorist attack. But there appear to be a lot of unanswered questions that are going to probably take some time to get through. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to get to the bottom of exactly what happened to try to in some way maybe prevent this from happening again, if indeed it was even preventable.
Yeah, it is interesting, though. The White House came out and said in a statement that there is no indication of nefarious intent. And then the FBI from the Baltimore field office came out and said there's no specific or credible information to suggest any ties to terrorism. And they made those conclusions within 6 hours after the ship hit the bridge.
Yeah, those sort of things kind of look, and obviously we're in a world, and one thing we need to point out to people, the reason people view it this way is because the government has lost all trust.
Mm-hmm.
This is the fault of the government. The reason people default to conspiracy is because the government has earned a zero trust. So the government has done this to themselves. And when you immediately say, well, there's nothing to indicate, how would you know? It's 6 hours in. I mean, you're not even there investigating, really, for the most part, probably, given the makeup of what you have to investigate 6 hours in. So that is a red flag for people. But again, I always try to be like, let's get the information first, and then we'll find out, you know, exactly and how the government handles it and how forthright and transparent they are with everything, because we have to be able to try to prevent something like this from happening again. We have to make sure whatever caused this thing to happen, that it does not happen again.
Well, those pads have been placed on other major bridges, and that bridge clearly did not have those pads placed near the waterline to stop that from happening.
But the bigger question has to be, how does the ship hit the bridge? What happened on that ship that caused it to hit the bridge? And again, that's going to unfortunately take time. I know people want instantaneous information, but that stuff is going to take time, and the onus will be on the government to be as transparent as humanly possible and give everybody the information, whether it makes the government look good, look bad, whatever, and then hopefully we'll get, you know, reassurance that it was some sort of tragic accident, and maybe here's A, B, and C that can help prevent that in the future. But until then, people are going to have red flags up because the government has lost all trust with the people.
Well, and it is going to have an effect, especially on the entire East Coast, because the Port of Baltimore is a major hub. It's going to be a logistical nightmare for the East Coast, especially affecting shipping and supply chain, and losing that bridge. It's going to be devastating to that area. Of course, the transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, said, they're going to try and fix it as quickly as possible. He did not give a time frame. The president was updating America on the collapse of the bridge and said it wasn't a terrorist attack, not intentional act, and that the government is going to pay for the entire cost of reconstructing it.
As I told Governor Moore, I've directed my team to move heaven and earth to reopen the port and rebuild the bridge as soon as humanly possible. And we're going to work hand in hand with the support of Maryland to support Maryland and whatever they ask for. We're going to work with our partners in Congress to make sure the state gets the support it needs. It's my intention that federal government will pay for the entire cost of reconstructing that bridge, and I expect the Congress to support my effort. This is going to take some time. The people of Baltimore can count on us, though, to stick with them at every step of the way.
Don't you love how he just throws it out there? We'll pay for everything.
Mm-hmm. Regardless of if it's the shipping company's fault.
Yeah. How much? Like, where does that money come from? I mean, I just love how these government people just throw these things out. We got to do this and we got to do that and we'll pay for this and we'll pay for that. Oh, okay. Great. And again, you're right, Casey, before there's even any answer as to here's who's to blame, mm-hmm. here's why this happened, here's what they or anything that could
before
have been done differently.
Any investigation at all. We're paying for it. We're going to rebuild it. But he went on. He said at one point he wasn't going to take any questions. But yes, he will be visiting Baltimore.
And the reason I'm not going to take a lot of questions, there's remaining issues that are open that we got to determine what's going to happen in terms of the rescue mission and the like. But
Do you plan to go to Baltimore, sir? And if so, how quickly?
I do, and as quickly as I can.
Uh-huh. Whoa, whoa, whoa,
as
whoa.
As quickly
whoa.
As he can.
Whoa, 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 whoa. How is this any different than
Palestine?
Yeah. How
is Palestine
in
Ohio?
In Ohio. What, mm-hmm. What's the difference there, Biden-esque?
It took him over a year to visit there.
Yeah.
So he's going to get to Baltimore as soon as he can. It's closer to D.C. I mean, it's, you know, within an hour.
He doesn't have a plane.
He doesn't need a plane.
I think he does have a plane.
He can get in the Beast and drive up there.
I mean, isn't that a serious, like rational question? Why will you be there as soon as you can, but you mm-hmm. didn't go to Palestine, Deb? Like, what is that tragedy more a tragedy than that one? Like, what? How does anybody square any of this?
He did say that he was very familiar with the Francis Scott Key Bridge. People in the area.
He probably said he was friends with Francis Scott Key, didn't he?
He said he's been there many, many times during his commutes. And
I remember when I helped Francis Scott Key.
I co-wrote that song he's famous for. He said that he took the train over the bridge.
I looked at Francis Scott Key and I said, look here, corn pop.
At about 1:30, a container ship struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which I've been over many, many times commuting from the state of Delaware on a train or by car.
Mm-hmm. He said he went on a train. Right? You heard that, right?
I don't think there is a train.
Bridge does
there.
Not have yeah. any rail lines. It only has four lanes of traffic.
So he almost
it's never had trains on it.
I would speak facetious when I said that, but he told a whopper almost as big as I helped write the song Francis Scott.
Right? He writes the songs, doesn't he?
He's Barry Manilow.
Okay, so another thing that happened yesterday is that Robert Kennedy Jr. announced his vice president pick.
Ah, jeez.
And he picked Nicole Shanahan.
If Nicole and I can get Americans to refuse to vote from fear, we're going to be in the White House in November. Nicole and I are running to help heal the symptoms of an ailing America, mm-hmm. to heal our divisions, to heal our economy, to heal our mental health and our spiritual and our physical health. But we can't do it alone. We need you. And now I have a governing partner mm-hmm. who will fight for you mm-hmm. and for your family until the last corporate kickback from our government, the last toxin is cleared from our water and our soil.
Okay, you know who was
the
happiest?
Is it done?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know who was the happiest about this announcement?
Who was that?
Donald Trump.
Oh, yes.
Because...
Well, she's a total... He picked a total leftist maniac. Mm-hmm. She is corporate America.
And very progressive.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the idea... She was married to what? The Google guy, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't that how she got her money?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she's not some, you know... Bill Gates and female Bill Gates. She was married to someone super rich, correct?
Yeah.
So he picked someone totally in touch and in tune to and chummy with mega corporations, which he's against. Mm-hmm. He's running as a centrist. He picked a total leftist maniac. And so what does she bring to the table for you other than she can give you a bunch of
other
money?
Other than money.
Which makes you just another politician. Mm-hmm. He's boring. She's boring. That money isn't going to matter because he doesn't have it necessary to drive the day.
Well, he grew up around politics. He's at least familiar with them, right?
Right.
Her, not so much. And you could tell she wasn't prepared for the stage that she has now been lifted to.
She's going to be a disaster. All right. We got to take a break because we have something very special coming up. Coming up next, it's our Feel Good segment.
Yes.
And look, obviously, Sunday is Easter. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be here tomorrow or Friday. And there's no way I was getting out the door without an Easter message. We try to do something with that every year. And there was an incredible message about Easter over the weekend at Life Church that was so much different than anything I'd heard before. And you know us, Casey, we got to be entertaining on top of giving people the stuff. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. We're going to have a special guest come in because obviously, look, the resurrection, the crucifixion and resurrection is the most significant event in human history. Whether you are a believer or not, the crucifixion and resurrection shapes everything that has happened in this world for more than 2,000 years. And so we got to give it its due. And we've got an incredibly special guest to talk about a very different message related to the resurrection when we come back.
It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
93 WIBC. It is the Kendall and Casey Show. I'm Rob Casey's here. And you know, Casey, it is that time.
What time is that?
Well, we have to find something positive going on in the world and talk about it.
Yes.
And
shouldn't be hard this week.
Well, look, here's the thing. So today is my last day. I'm done for the not period. Some people just did a celebration. Oh my gosh, it's his last day. He's done forever.
Finish the sentence.
It's my last day for the week.
There we go.
And obviously Easter is Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I said there's no way I can skedoodle on out the door without doing something on Easter.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, it is the most significant event in human history.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, I was thinking about that this morning. Even if you're a non-believer, your entire world, religion, etc., is shaped around this event. So we have to talk about it because it is actually real and it did actually happen. But I thought, how do we give kind of a different take on this? How do we do something different than what maybe our audience has heard before as it relates to Jesus's resurrection?
You're talking about other than just the story that
right.
we know.
Exactly, because everybody's heard the story. Obviously, it's wonderful. It's amazing. But we are in the entertainment business here, Casey. Let's face it. And I saw something recently, and I said, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. This would be the perfect way to address this issue. And it comes from our friends at Life Church.
Yeah.
And actually joining us now, Nathan Peternell. He's the lead pastor at Life Church. How's Nathan, hello.
Hey.
And so full disclosure, you guys obviously advertise on the show. But you guys, the topic of the sermon this past weekend, because obviously it was Palm Sunday. We're now in Easter week, Easter season. And I kind of felt so silly and so ignorant, but I was like, I've never really thought about this before, is what happened between when Jesus was crucified and when he rose from the dead.
Yeah.
In case I've never, like, how did I not, like, just ponder what was happening before? I've never thought about that before, I don't think.
Right. There were a few days there.
Yes. So, Nathan, you guys, I'm just curious, like, why did you guys make that the focus of the sermons this week at Life Church?
Well, I think a lot of Christians, they haven't thought about it.
Right. And guilty. 100%.
And you talk about the triumphant entry, which is Palm Sunday, and everybody goes, the donkey story, you know? Well, there was another triumphant entry, and there's going to be still yet another triumphant entry, according to the scripture, one that happens in the book of Revelation. But there's one that happens that doesn't get a lot of press, and it's what happened to Jesus when he died on the cross. Where did he go? And if you're a Christian, and you've ever heard of the Apostles' Creed, which Catholics and Protestants alike use, there's this little verse. This
oh,
little,
see, Casey, we can get along on this. Mm-hmm. You and I can unite.
Yeah.
This little phrase that said that he descended into hell. And people go, holy cow, Jesus went to hell? I mean, didn't he suffer enough on the cross? Why does he have to go to hell? But then there's the question of what does that mean? And so there's a story in Luke chapter 16, which is the rich man and Lazarus. There's two Lazarus in the Bible. There's the beggar Lazarus, and then there's Jesus' friend Lazarus.
Right.
But in the story of Luke 16, it tells us that the rich man goes to hell, or the place of the departed dead, but also that Lazarus the beggar goes to the place of the departed dead, and they're both in the same place, but on two different sides of a great chasm. And on one side's the place of torment, which is heat and flame, and the other side is the place of comfort, which is called Abraham's bosom.
So pre-Jesus, dying on the cross and coming back from the dead, this is where people who lived a good, godly life would go.
Regardless, it's called the underworld. So regardless of whether you go to the side of comfort or the side of torment, everybody went to this place, and it's a holding place. And so, according to the scriptures, everybody who believed in the sacrificial system of the Old Testament, when you sinned and then you killed a lamb or you killed an animal, and that the Bible says without the shedding of blood, there's no forgiveness of sins. Even though you didn't know Jesus, but you believed in God's word and were doing this, you were believing in what was to come. Those were types, shadows, and pictures of Jesus, which would be the ultimate Lamb of God come to take away the sins of the world. So
his blood was shed, so we didn't have to kill lambs anymore.
Well, absolutely. And the Bible says that he was slain from the foundations of the earth, right? This was always the mind of God. It wasn't plan B. This was always going to happen. God knew if he made man, man would mess up. And he still made man. And he still had a plan.
Let me introduce you again real quick. Nathan Peternell is our guest. He's the lead pastor at Life Church. We're talking about, because it is obviously Easter season, this just incredible thing. Should I be embarrassed that I never thought about this before?
No, I think a lot of Christians don't.
Have you ever thought about this, Casey?
No, I haven't. And you know what? I've actually pulled up the Apostles' Creed that you mentioned. And the line is, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, died, and was buried. He descended into hell, and on the third day he rose again.
Yeah, so we're talking about what happened to Jesus in these days, three days between the crucifixion and the resurrection. Go ahead, sorry.
So essentially, everybody goes to this place. One side, in the story of rich man and Lazarus, the rich man wants to get out, or to have Lazarus come over and just dip his finger in water, put it on his tongue because he's in so much torment. And Abraham tells him, I'm sorry, that can't happen. Nobody can go from this side to your side. Nobody from your side can escape to come to our side. And he says, oh, well, then please send Lazarus back from the dead, send him to my brothers because I don't want them to come here. And you've heard misery loves company, not in hell.
Better known as this radio show.
Well, not in hell. Even those in hell, they don't want anybody to go there. And he says, well, if you would send Lazarus back from the dead, then there's no way my brothers would come here. And Abraham says to the rich man, he says, no, they have the law, they have the prophets, and even if one would be sent back from the dead, they won't believe. Well, God essentially did even what the rich man was asking for, because he gave us the law, he gave us the prophets, and all to tell us who was to come, but he did send one back from the dead, and that was Jesus. So Jesus dies on the cross. He says, it is finished. He dies. Where does he go? He goes to the place of the departed dead. Now, his body's going to go to a tomb for 3 days, mm-hmm. and all of the people that are alive on earth that were his followers are going to mourn. They're going to be dejected. They never saw this coming, even though he told them it was coming. But where does Jesus go?
They believed, the belief was, and this is why people mocked him, they believed he's, because he rides in on Palm Sunday, the King of the Jews, he's going to free us. Their interpretation was, he's going to free us from the Romans.
Yes.
It's totally amazing to me.
Well, I mean, that's what they were looking for. They were looking for a political leader, but God came to be a whole lot more than a political leader. He came to be the one to set us free from sin and death. So Jesus now descends into Hades, which is the term that we would use. He goes down and he goes down to gather up what belongs to him, all of the righteous Old Testament saints who believed in the sacrifice. And he says, look, when you believed in the sacrifice, you believed in me. When you did those things in faith, and what is Abraham? He's the father of faith. It says that Abraham believed God and it was counted unto him as righteousness. So all those who were in the side of comfort, they believed in God and it was counted unto them as righteous. Now Jesus goes down and he says, I am taking all of you with me. And so he proclaims himself. He says, see, I'm here. Now, there's another portion of spirits that we have to talk about. the ones that are already in chains and bondage on the other side of the chasm. And those are the demonic powers that the Bible says have already been imprisoned because they did not honor the boundaries that God had said, and God put them there. That's why, like, when Jesus meets the Gerasene demoniac, the demons are freaking out because they say, have you come to torture us and throw us into the abyss before the appointed hour? They are freaked out by Jesus. Well, he's also declaring to them, hey, you guys thought that you were going to kill me, and you thought that this was going to win you the day, and that God could somehow be overthrown. I'm just here to declare to you that you lose.
This sermon was fascinating, and full disclosure, I watched it yesterday, and that's why I love you guys have the Life Church IN. You guys have the sermons all posted, so you can go back and watch them when you want. I was watching this yesterday, and I was like, oh my gosh, I feel so silly that this has never even dawned on me before that, like, what happened for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was a great sermon.
There's a verse that a lot of Christians are familiar with, and it says that he led captivity captive. He goes down to where all the people are waiting for him. They're waiting, and he says, okay, it's time to go. I've come to be everything that you always believed in. Let's go. Now he's going to empty hell. And the Bible says in Revelation chapter 1, it says, I am he who is the first and the last. I was dead, but now I am living. This is Jesus speaking. And he said, and now I have the keys of death and the hell. So death and Hades. So Jesus goes down. He takes from the enemy all their authority, all their power. He basically makes them look stupid and then takes and empties out hell. Now, here's a cool thought about Greek mythology. In Greek mythology, Hades is the god of the underworld, right?
Yeah.
Nobody escapes from Hades. Jesus came down and he said, I'm just going to rob you blind, man. And he just takes everything out. So it is a triumphant entry, but not just into Jerusalem. This is the triumphant entry into hell.
You know, Casey, I was thinking about this morning before I left to go to work. I was just watching my daughter, and I was just looking at her, and she's totally unaware that I'm watching her. And I'm looking at her going, how anybody could doubt that any of this is real? Like, if you think all of this stuff just magically happened in some sort of explosion or vacuum or whatever, and it just blows my mind that there are people who do. And that's why I just thought, man, we got to touch on this, because this is really like an incredible story. Mm-hmm. And it's one that I'd never thought of before.
Yeah. Different side of an Easter story. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's what we do here. We entertain.
Yeah.
That's our job. Hey, what do you guys got coming up for Life Church on Sunday?
Well, we got services. If you want to catch a service at one of our four locations, just go to lifechurchin.com and you can click on the location that's closest to you. And this is kind of the Super Bowl of Christians, right?
Yeah.
This is our big day. And, you know, and so it's just going to be celebratory and great. You know, they say that that this is the one time year that if somebody got an invitation to go to church, they are most likely to say yes.
Yeah.
So give somebody an invitation and say, come with me. Let's go out to breakfast afterwards. Make it a celebratory day. But this is the day where we see many, many people who have been drifting and away from God. And they go, you know what? They do exactly what you just said. The story's too good not to be true. It's too perfect. And then they start reevaluating their lives and making some changes.
Nathan, Peter, now Life Church, thank you for this. This was great.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.
It's time to hear from you. Kendall and Casey present Voicemails. Brought to you by QC Kinetics for non-surgical regenerative medicine treatments at 317-559-PAIN.
Number 317-684-8444. If you would like to become involved with voicemails, this is the portion of the program where we turn it over to you. So it was a big night last night on your television as four candidates for governor had a televised debate. And we start off the voicemail segment with a comment about that debate.
Well, thanks to Channel 4 and 59 for running such a great snooze fest last night called the debate. This was terrible. They didn't have two candidates they should have had on. I'm looking forward to this morning, Rob, when you do have possibly two of the better candidates, if not the best candidates, on. Mm-hmm. Not a single question about property taxes.
Correct.
Nice guys. Mm-hmm. This is what is on everybody's mind is property taxes. Mm-hmm. Please, if you're going to be the wonderful big news source you are in Indianapolis, making all your claims, we're number one at this, number one at that. We know how demographics work, by the way. Give us some substance.
Okay. So, yeah,
good on it.
A little upset that they didn't address that.
They won't fix the property taxes because they don't know how, and we're going to tell you how, hopefully, next hour.
By the way, have I shown you what I brought in today?
You got a bell.
Yeah. Get used to that sound.
You got a bell.
That's my bell.
I thought you were
going to
have
bell.
A zapper.
No. Although that may be more appropriate. We'll see. Okay, so it was also a big week for Abdul as he was in court.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and so here's a phone call about Honest Gabe.
It's 10 a.m. right now, and I don't think Honest Gabe has learned his lesson. The reason why I say it's 10 p.m. because I was listening to your show and I was like, I'm going to Google this guy because I've never even seen what he looks like or anything like that. So I Google it and it says 10 hours ago on his Twitter or X or wherever the heck it is now, 10 hours ago, so around noon, this is what he wrote on his Twitter. A lawyer cannot threaten the life of another individual, but only in Marion County they can get away with it. We did embarrass them, and the judge was definitely upset at him for making a mockery of the judicial system. Is he okay? Like, does he need to be seen at a 72-hour, like, does he need a 72-hour observation at a mental institution or something?
So, of course, he's talking about Honest Gabe Whitley, who was flushed down the legal toilet by Abdul the other day. I don't whether Gabe's okay or not. I don't know. He's a serial pathological liar, and he's got some very serious issues in front of him, and he doesn't clearly have any appreciation for them. The bigger issue with Gabe is not what a doofus Gabe is or what a liar Gabe is.
It's that he's running for office.
Right. And the Marion County Republican Party knows who this guy is. Mm-hmm. They know he could be their nominee for Congress. The Indiana Republican State Party knows who this guy is. They know what he's accused of having done. I mean, that hearing, Casey, it was like being witness to some sort of insane, bizarro world dinner theater the other day, except it was real life. Like, this guy was doing that. And the state party and the county party know who this guy is. They know what he's alleged to have done. They know all about him. And yet they don't say a word. There's a big part of me that hopes he is the nominee for Congress, because can you imagine the fun that we'll be able to have with that? Oh, and once he becomes the nominee for Congress, more people will start digging into this guy. This is, he will not stop. This is the thing about Gabe. He will not stop until someone in a position of authority puts a stop to him.
I think it's interesting because he says that WIBC is obsessed with him. I think it's really the other way around. Okay, coming up at 11 o'clock today, we have our diversity
debate.
Yes,
that's right.
And Jamie Rittenour is going to be in, and you're going to be debating as well. I spent, instead of spending my evening on Twitter critiquing the televised debate that was happening last night, I was coming up with the moderator questions for our debate today, and I've got my coin for our coin toss to see who goes first. I've got my bell ready, and we're really prepared for 11 o'clock. I think it's really going to be interesting, but here is a phone call and some advice for me.
As Gary from Lebanon, on the debate tomorrow, I think the moderator, Casey, ought to ask the questions in the spirit of Roseanne, Rosanna, and Adana.
No, I won't be doing that. Okay, we've got one last thing we need to cover before Hammer joins us.
You got
a letter? You got some fan mail,
I got this email yesterday, and my favorite thing is when somebody will send a mean email to me, and they will copy our bosses on it. And our boss, one time, Dion, said, overwhelmingly, Rob, I get the most complaints about you. And then he just chuckled and walked away. Like, I just love how people think, if I just let his bosses know how angry I am at him, they're just going to fire him immediately. So we have had a little fun with Purdue basketball, specifically Zach Edey.
Yeah.
And we have, I've said he gets immense leeway with the officials. And I've said, I don't think he's that great. I think he's a gargantuan human who, when playing against other college players, is a very effective player. There's a reason he didn't go to the NBA last year. There's a reason he's not going to be overly successful in the NBA. He's a perfect college player, especially when Cunzo Martin and Glenn Robinson are reffing the games with you. But other than that, I don't think he's that great. I was unaware we had such soft people in our listening audience, Casey.
I think it's a Purdue fan.
So I'm going to read you this guy's email. Now, keep in mind, he copied my bosses on this, our bosses, thinking he was going to get me in trouble. And then I'll read you my response to him. Are you ready?
Oh, okay.
All right, here we go. I have listened to your show on and off for some time. Casey is quite good.
Oh, yes. I like that.
Your comments on Purdue basketball and Zach Edey were off-based and showed a lack of basketball knowledge. Your comment that referees are in the tank for Edey and Purdue was totally out of line. I would tell you to stay in your lane.
Oh.
But clearly, someone as negative and full of themselves as you has no filter.
No.
Not sure why you chose to disparage the only Indiana team and its star player in the NCAA tournament. But if your goal was to lose listeners, you have at least succeeded in losing one.
Oh.
Cordially.
Yeah.
David.
Why does David sound like Donald Trump? It's like the same voice. Can you go back and read the second sentence?
Casey is quite good.
Yes, there it is.
Okay, so would you like to read my response to him?
Yeah.
We don't need any music for this. I just said, if you copy more people on this email, it might be more effective. I would like more people to know how much leeway I think the refs give Edey. And I have a degree from IU. So it was actually part of the requirement to get the degree that I had to sign a pledge to always disparage Purdue.
Okay. So this is just a Purdue fan who's upset that you're a Hoosier who's not supporting the Indiana team. He just wants you to be proud, represent the state.
Yeah, I'm led to believe that this guy was like shooting fireworks off in 87 when Smart hit the shot for IU. Right. Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Hammer's going to join us next. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So I'm going to have to do some bowel harvesting tomorrow, I'm told.
Yeah, because we got a quick turnaround here. Meltdown Madness is coming to an end on the Hammer and Nigel show in the afternoon.
Hey, real quick, you're Jason Hammer, by the way.
That is correct. Thank
Hammer
you.
And Nigel show.
Thank you. We do the afternoon show, 3 to 7, Monday through Friday. Tell your friends.
We got a lot of new listeners because we're having the diversity debate coming up next hour. So.
Yes, which I'm excited to listen to.
Yeah.
But let's get to the current matchup of Meltdown Madness presented by Window Nation, where we've taken some high-profile rants and meltdowns, had a seeded bracket, and you, the listeners, vote for your favorite. Now, the winner of this matchup moves on to the national championship game this afternoon.
See, this is a really quick turnaround because our little engine that could, the Lasorda Bavacqua rant as a 10 seed with the powered by the Kendall and Casey show audience has made it to the finals. I thought I was going to have some time to get the Lasordaites and Bavacquaites fired up, but you're telling me no dice.
Are there any?
So, did you grow up?
I'm not going to let you disparage the good name of Kirk Bavacqua, Casey.
Okay.
Did you grow up in the state of Indiana?
I sure did.
Do you believe there should be a one-class basketball tournament?
Oh, absolutely.
So what would happen in the one-class basketball tournament years ago?
I see what you're saying. You got a morning game and then a
championship game in the night.
Same day, yeah.
We're keeping it real here.
Makes it harder to bowel harvest, though, if we can't prepare.
It's too fair. So this is the current matchup, and I'm going to play you clips. We've heard these clips a million times, so I'm going to do something a little different. The first clip is Casey Kasem melting down on his weekly Top 40 radio program. So here to recite that Casey Kasem meltdown is AI Casey Daniels.
He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of Let's Go Start Again.
See, when you come out of those up-tempo got numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but god damn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand. Is Don on the phone? I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is, that's up-tempo, and I gotta talk about a fucking dog dying.
Oh no!
A.I. Casey reading Casey Kasem.
So good.
Casey Kasem was much more angry than me. I sounded like, it's Don on the phone.
You really wanted to talk to Don,
right,
I think.
Don.
That's now, so good.
Not to be outdone, oh, for the sake of being fair and balanced.
Yeah.
That clip is taking on the number one seed in our tournament, Bob Knight's iconic locker room meltdown rant.
Mm-hmm.
Here to recite that is A.I. Rob Kendall.
Nice.
If you're not going to recover Greg Graham, if you're just going to let him drive by you, if the rest of you are going to let him catch the ball outside the 3-second lane and drive all the way in here without one guy challenging him, then I'm leaving and you f***ing guys can run until you can't even suffer. Now, I'm tired of this shit. I'm sick and tired of a f***ing 8-10 record. I'm f***ing tired of losing to Purdue. I'm not here to f*** around this week. Now, you may be, but I'm not.
A.I. Rob Kendall reciting A.I. Robert Montgomery Knight.
So far off from the hate mail that you received
and
earlier.
And it sounded like the exact thing I said right before that Purdue IU came at Assembly Hall this year.
Wow. Fantastic.
That's so great.
Good work, Hammer.
So I believe we are ready to declare victory, right?
Oh, okay.
The election desk has said that Bob Knight will win this matchup, and that means we've got a national championship game this afternoon.
Oh, boy.
Set your radio, set your alarm, 4:35. You've got Bob Knight, the number one seed, taking on Tommy Lasorda's rant against Kurt Bavakwa.
Wow, that's a heavy lift for the Kendall and Casey listeners.
Ooh, we're going to have all the pomp and circumstance. We're going to have an invocation, the national anthem. There'll be the playing of Back Home Again and then Indiana.
Yeah.
We're going to do it big this afternoon for the championship.
What else is coming up?
Tony Kennett will join us coming up this afternoon. Dr. Laura Wilson from UIndy.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a lot of fun, man. Nobody has more fun than we do.
Diversity debate is coming up next.
Let's
Thanks,
go.
Hammer. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. In one shot.